The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday, podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been another busy news week, and we like to review the major stories of the week here on the Black Information Network. Today, we are joined by Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal to discuss this week's major stories. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Ja. All right, Mr. Mike Island, welcome back to the show. How have you been, sir?
Been fine. It's good to be back.
All right.
Good to be back on the Ramses Ja thing.
All right, I'll take it, man. And Nicole Deal, okay, it wouldn't be the same without you. How have you been?
I am doing wonderful, sir, and thank you. It's good to be back.
All right,
not
I like
that,
to hear that too.
Back.
All right, so let's get to the news. First up, protests on college campuses around the country over the war between Israel and Palestine have thrown a prominent congresswoman and her college-age daughter into the political spotlight. Nicole, let's start today's program with you. Tell us more about the folks involved in these protests, then Mike will come to you to hear your thoughts next.
Absolutely, Ramses. So war is raging right now between Israel and Gaza. We all know that. And these pro-Palestinian protests are breaking out all over the country. They're getting bigger. They're getting more riotous every day, particularly on college campuses. So protests are happening at some of the top Ivy League colleges and universities around the country. That includes Harvard, Yale, Columbia, lots of others. Police right now are trying to break up a tent protest at the University of Southern California, Texas state troopers on horseback at the University of Texas at Austin, recent protests at the University of Minnesota, where over 100 students were arrested, and the list just goes on and on. The protests are creating lots of safety concerns, resulting in things like canceled classes and students being arrested, things of that nature. So just so our listeners understand, I want to talk a little bit about why these people are protesting. I mean, it's probably a given and a lot of people already know, but Israel has military operations in Gaza. So lots of people are condemning and accusing the Israeli government of violating international law, mm-hmm. committing war crimes, etc. And just to put the situation in perspective, from October of last year up until now, there have been over 34,000 Palestinians that have died in this war. So the people that are protesting are pushing for a ceasefire in Gaza, or just an end to this war altogether. So during a recent protest at the University of Minnesota, Representative Ilhan Omar shows up and speaks at one of the rallies. And the timing of her doing that was just a few days after her daughter was arrested during an on-campus protest at Columbia University in New York. And then later, according to her daughter, she was basically, quote unquote, basically evicted after she was suspended. So for me, this all just boils down to an issue of free speech. Free speech is not always pretty, and it's not always convenient. Sometimes the words are harsh. I mean, but in my opinion, we just have to stop censoring. And just because I don't agree with your ideologies, if it's a peaceful protest, then why not? I think about all of the protests that happened during the civil rights movement. Those days and those moments made us who we are today. And we had lots of people in the Black community standing up for things that they believed in. There's certainly still work to be done. So I just think that if you have a right to your free speech, if there's something that you feel so passionate about that you are willing to lose sleep over, be inconvenienced over, miss meals over, you know, for back in the day, sit at a counter over, sit out in the heat or the cold and the rain for hours and days. If you're willing to do that, then it might just be something worth defending. So why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, let's get your thoughts here too.
This takes me back to 1970. I'm a mature individual, so I was around in 1970, but not old enough to be in high school or college. But as a kid, becoming aware of college protests, and the wake-up call for me was when they closed the Ohio State University, my old school. They closed it for 2 weeks due to protests of the Vietnam War was going on at that time. And the protests and riots got up to a fever pitch where they had to call in the Ohio National Guard and eventually closed the school, which means they closed the university owned radio and television station as well. Mm-hmm. That's where I became aware, because there was 2 weeks of no Sesame Street. So I knew something was up. Mm-hmm. So that's as a small kid, I investigated to find out why that was happening. And I became keenly aware of the Vietnam War, the protests on college campuses. I became keenly aware of President Nixon's announcement on April 30th that they would bomb military targets in Cambodia, which would take out, of course, innocent civilians. And fast forward to 2024, during the same week, this is the same week that that happened, the closing of the Ohio State University, we have protests there right now, and it's come to a fever pitch. The Ohio National Guard has not been called in. Local police and forces and other law enforcement are on the campus right now. And it's it started off very peaceful, but like Nicole said, that passion is overriding everything, and they're willing to take some risks to express their views, and this freedom of expression.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you shared that story. I went to college, obviously, and I remember having there was a speaker. I was in the auditorium. I was the president of the Black Student Union. And so we had a lot of speakers come out to my college campus. I remember one of them suggested to us that we were the warrior class of our people. It was us at that in that age range, you know, the late teens, early 20s, we were the ones who could be the most visible out on the streets and could bring attention to issues. And so that kind of stayed with me. And I'm glad you shared your story there. I think it reflects the sentiment of a tweet that I came across. And I want to share that. This is from a person named @_floodlight. And he says, a good law of history is that if you ever find yourself opposing a student movement while siding with the ruling class, you are wrong. Every single time, in every era, no matter the issue.
Wow.
And yeah, it's really powerful, right? And the truth is, when you look at it that way, it kind of makes sense. Not only has our country had a tendency toward, you know, a more progressive society, but really the barometer is really set by students on college campuses. You mentioned, you know, the Vietnam War. Ultimately, you know, we pulled out of that after losing, to be frank. And, you know, that's not the only one. You know, we're talking about civil rights. We're talking about, you know, pretty much everything. And the one area where we can't really suggest that it was college campus based is with the George Floyd protests. But, you know, we were all in the middle of COVID, but it was still college-aged leaders that were organizing a lot of that warrior class-esque movement. And so I feel like people should really pay attention to what's happening on the college campuses, which are overwhelmingly in favor of the Palestinian plight. I think that, you know, what we've seen is that Israel, the state of Israel, has gone after colleges preemptively, but they've gone after the leadership. We've discussed a lot of, you know, black leaders who have lost their positions at colleges as a result of pro-Israeli intervention. But Palestine is in the hearts of the students. And indeed, the masses, global support has largely shifted away from Israel and largely is now in favor of the Palestinian plight globally, because no one wants to see this many people die as a result of what they believe to be Israel's doing. You know, Israel packs all of these people into what many consider to be an open air prison and then is now able to bomb them without considering the logistics of the predicament that they put the people in. And so there are a lot of folks that look at this as like indiscriminate bombing. There are a lot of people who have, you know, paid with their lives. And, you know, the arguments that these people voted Hamas in doesn't hold up because most of the people who have lost their lives were not even old enough to vote in the last election. Last election took place in 2006. Right. So there's lots of people who weren't able to vote. And then of those people that voted, not all of them voted for Hamas in the first place.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to be obviously a certain age to vote. So you're talking about people born, let's see, what's 18 years prior to 2006. You know, there's a good majority of the people who did not vote for Hamas. And so these claims that the state of Israel is making is it's becoming very thin. And, you know, to be fair, I think you both mentioned that there's two passionate sides. You know, obviously Israel wants to get back their hostages, and you know that plays to the heartstrings of a lot of pro-Israeli people. But I want to share something from The Hill that I think reflects kind of a strange reality and a strange dichotomy that we're up against. This says the Biden administration denounced the protests as blatantly anti-Semitic Sunday and claimed that they are encouraging calls for violence. And the next paragraph says a significant portion of the protesting students are Jewish and protest groups have fought back against characterizations of their demonstrations as anti-Semitic. And I think that that's critical here, because one of the biggest things that pro-Israeli folks have been able to say is that anybody who stands to ask for a ceasefire or, you know, a free Palestine or a two-state solution or whatever, somehow on some level, they are anti-Semitic. And for folks that are not familiar, anti-Semitism means you don't like Jewish people. And pro-Palestine means you want Palestine and Israel to live in two separate, you know, under two separate, you know, governments, you know, completely. And so one of them, we're talking about a government, a very specific government. And one of them, we're talking about a faith that extends to people in every corner of the globe. And those two things are not the same. And so having a significant amount of Jewish protesters, and this is true on every campus, right? A significant amount of people. I've met Jewish people who are like, man, Israel is tripping, you know? But I think that taking all of these things together, you start to understand what the students are talking about. And again, if history is any indication, the students typically are kind of on the cutting edge of the next progressive turn that we take as a society, at least in this country, and I'd imagine globally as well. So moving on, next up in South Carolina, many people expected a guilty verdict following a sentence that should have included the electric chair. But that wasn't the case when a white South Carolina DJ got a reduced criminal sentence after pleading guilty to sex trafficking 700 underage black girls. Mike, this is definitely an uncomfortable story, but let's get some details on the case from you. And then, Nicole, we're going to get your thoughts next.
Yeah, definitely for me, I have a wife and four daughters. Mm-hmm. So these types of stories really hit a nerve. The story is, if you haven't heard it, and it's fairly new to me too, Jason Roger Pope is the guy's name. He's a DJ known as DJ Kid. and he pleaded guilty to 5 counts of sex trafficking of a minor, and a bunch of other stuff. 5 counts of criminal sexual conduct, 3 counts of criminal sexual conduct last summer, and then pleads guilty, and he also told the court that he intentionally infected one of the victims with HIV, and it's a very uncomfortable story. He was sentenced to 30 years in prison. Like you said, people were expecting the electric chair, but he got 30 years in prison, and it was suspended to 19 years following his release from prison. He's going to be on sex offender probation for 5 years as a special sex offender, as a special sex offender agents monitor him. They're going to watch him. So he's going to be listed on the sex offender registry and all that, but most people think that he shouldn't even got that far. 700 underage black girls. And, you know, the disparity is too obvious when you think of other similar stories, and there have been involving black people, and the penalties have been harsh. And this seems almost like, even though there are consequences, he is paying, that he pretty much left off the hook. Yeah. Let off the hook on this. That's the overall feeling. If you don't go into the graphic details of everything that took place, but several of the victims, they had statements presented by the court on how this defendant's actions affected them, and it was horrifying for them. But despite that, they are still going to have this guy, you know, pretty much alive and well and walking around. And what seems like it's going to be in little time. So, yeah, I talked about this with my wife and 4 daughters once I realized I was going to get this story. And they said, well, I'm sure you're going to be real brief about it. I said, yeah, but it's crazy. It's the disparity is what I'm looking at. If this were a black person who would have done this against 700 white girls underage. Mm-hmm.
Nicole, let's hear from you too.
Absolutely. But first of all, this man pleaded guilty. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's just start right there. So reduced to 19 years. And let's just be honest, with good behavior, he will probably be out in half that time. Okay. This is disturbing to me on so many levels. So this white man, who was at one point believed to be a white supremacist and who is HIV positive, decides to leave his side of the tracks. And I'm saying that as a euphemism, and come into our community and victimize, and I'm using that word intentionally, hundreds, not dozens, hundreds, victimize hundreds of our young, black, beautiful women. This man demonstrated reckless, irresponsible, demeaning, demoralizing, just despicable moral and ethical conduct for many, many years. And then he just gets a slap on the wrist for it. I couldn't believe it. It is so heartbreaking, but it's also insightful. I think race is definitely a factor. If this were a black man with the same inclination, hundreds of little white girls, I shudder to think about what his fate would be. This man is clearly a predator. He's a pedophile. He intentionally targeted black. Matter of fact, in one of his own social media posts, he wrote this. He writes, I'm 36 with 693 bodies, all black females, WBU. What about you? I mean, this is an affront on the black community. This is a despicable travesty of justice. It is an absolute disgrace that the punishment does not fit the crime in this case. I also have a daughter, like Mike said. I have a 20-year-old daughter, and if he had done this to my daughter, I would have wanted him to get 19 years just for her alone, just for her, or more. But the fact that he victimized hundreds of women and he gets this slap on the wrist, in my opinion, is just, it's a disgrace to me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicole. What a perspective. And thanks for going where I didn't want to go. So thank you for bringing all that in.
Sure. And you know, the thing is, so I saw his Instagram last night and I pulled it up just now. And, you know, he has this sort of like a handwritten letter. This is like most recent post, a handwritten letter where he's trying to plead his case. And then prior to that, he's got tons of pictures with Black women. Most of them are celebrities because I'm assuming that he had some affiliation with Atlantic or somehow he was affiliated with some label, right? And had access to these artists. But if you look through his social media, you can see lots of Black women there, and it makes it very real and very vivid. And this is a sad story, but I think that your point is well made, Nicole, when you say that if you turn the tables, make this a Black man and make the victims all white women, he gets the electric chair, or he's never seen the light of day again. There's no, you know, you're out in 19 years or less with good behavior, and then you have to register as a sex offender. I think the term for his sex offender registry was like 5 years or something like that. And after that, he doesn't have to register anymore. So if I remember correctly, I don't have my notes.
No, that is correct.
Yeah, that is. Okay. But I remember seeing that. And so that it just felt like, don't we have more value than that? Don't our women have more value than that? And when you look at his social media, you know, framed through the lens of the conversation, admittedly, but when you look at his social media, you start to see how a person can use Black culture, Black women, whatever, to further whatever agenda it was that he had. And then hearing about the post that you mentioned, Nicole, how he has hundreds of bodies. What about you? I'm assuming he's flaunting these Black women as sexual conquests. It feels particularly gross. So I'm sure there's going to be people waiting on him to get out, though. So
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That'll be enough of that.
Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal are here with us discussing this week's major stories. All right, next up, there's a lot of battling happening. To be honest, I'm not a big fan of that. But you know what? While Chris Brown is busy battle rapping Quavo and Drake is using AI to create diss tracks about his former friend and rap star Rick Ross, a new video for the rap song entitled Black MAGA was just released, and it touts rising support in the black community for former President Donald Trump. Nicole, let's come back to you on this story. Give us some context of this Black MAGA song and video, and then Mike, we want you to weigh in next.
Okay, so I had never heard of this particular rapper until I got to researching for this story. So I'm going to give you, I did have a chance to watch the video. I stomached through it. So I'm going to give you my real reaction to this song. All right. All right. Y'all ready for it? Uh-huh. Are y'all ready? Three.
Yeah, let's get it.
Two, one. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. Okay. The hook in this song is kind of catchy. I'll give him that. So here's my attempt at that. Donald Trump. Yeah, that's my president. Donald Trump. Yeah, that's my president. So
creative.
I wish you could see me kind of bouncing in my chair and pumping my fist too while I'm doing it. So it is a little bit catchy, but this song actually just made me laugh. The song is by a rapper who refers to himself as the Black Donald Trump. The video features images of lots of past presidents who are also white. And just like any other rap video, there are plenty of girls that are dressed in very little. They're bent over, shaking their rumps. And, you know, there's a Donald Trump lookalike in the video as well. One of the lyrics in the song, though, the lyrics are, you know, a little more directed than that hook that I just talked about. But one of the lyrics in the song even refers to Donald Trump as the first Black president, which I find offensive. And it goes on to say that former President Obama did nothing for Blacks while in office and things of that nature. But just as a whole, I can't take it seriously. I think the maker of this song is intelligent and creative enough to have created a song that he knew would garner lots of attention in an election year and therefore make some money. So that's just really all it is for me. I think it's an attention getter. I think there's probably more of a pronouncement that this person is seeking dollars versus really looking to gain any following or votes or anything like that. I don't think Donald Trump was featured in the collaboration of this whatsoever or anything like that. So I think it was just done in jest and in fun, and I just found it to be hilarious. I'm not taking it seriously.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Mike, let's get you to weigh in here.
Neither am I. All I can do is say, I'm Casey Kasem on American Top 40, and here's our new number one song, the Black MAGA song by the Black Donald Trump on American Top 40.
It's a great impression. You know,
yeah, thank you. You know, the Nicole did the hook right. Donald Trump, yeah, that's my president. Then it follows with Donald Trump, the first Black president. And I'm thinking, without them even explaining it, the first Black president, probably in reference to the trial he's under, he's seen as a victim. Going under the same type of prejudice that Black people experience in the court system, and they think that he's being victimized like a Black person in there. And I think that's part of what the first Black president mean. But that hook comes up a little too often, which means they don't have much lyrical content. And beyond that, they don't have much lyrical content. That's why that hook comes up too many times in the song. So after a couple listens, you feel you've heard it 1,000 times because it's repeated so much and too often. There's nothing in between the refrain that's of any substance. They do throw the N-word in there a couple of times to blacken it up a little bit, you know, to make it seem like a real Black video. But it's hilarious, and it's hard to take seriously. I think it's not going to get much traction. I think it's going to blow away here after 15 minutes. We'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. It's
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just forgot to mention that there is a mention in there about illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. And so the lyric is basically saying something about, you know, like people in my country have to get in line behind the illegal immigrants that are being brought into the country. So I know illegal immigration is a hot topic all over the country right now. And so I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that.
Okay. I'm glad you did, because, you know, there's not a lot of substance, but there's enough to get folks like us talking about it. So it's important that that is stated. Personally, the song is awful. It's terrible. It's not worth listening. Don't give this person the views. That's my personal opinion. I'm not a fan of anybody who sells out his people. And this is corny on that front alone. You know, the way the articles are written about it is like, you know, the video has a bunch of African-Americans in Blacks for Trump shirts. And it just is again, it's just selling out your people. There's nothing, there's no polish. There's no, like, you wouldn't expect this to be on an album, like a real sincere work from an artist. It's a cash grab. And it's meant to get people talking, and it paints us in a, you know, there's something to be said about hip hop culture. You know, women in the videos dancing and so forth. You can see that type of dance expressed, you know, in Africa. You can see, you know, there's you can make that argument. Certainly after as long as hip hop has been around for 50 years, you can make that argument. When you have something like this, and you have the dancing girls and the you know, all the hip hop elements in there, just kind of as ancillary elements, so that you can get this off, it really does look like selling your people out. And you know, I don't have any respect for anybody that does that. The things that he did kind of bring up in the song, you know, they're you know, arguments that are often made on Fox News just to scare conservative, poor white people. And I'm not knocking conservatives, but there's a certain, like, you know, the dog whistles that come out. And it's not to say that there's nothing to be said about illegal immigration. It's not to say that there's nothing to be said about, you know, all these things. But, you know, to pick a line from the song, you know, he's talking about the how PPP fed the whole hood. Right. And he's somehow connecting that with Donald Trump, like Donald Trump put that play together. And that wasn't a Donald Trump play. Indeed, Donald Trump slowed it down. I remember it took us an extra week or two to even get the $1,200 checks, because Donald Trump wanted to make sure that his name was on the checks to bolster his chances of getting reelected. That's not a person that puts the people first. That's the person that puts himself first. I just can't see anyone else doing that, right? And people ignore that because their whole shtick is being contrarian. Their whole shtick is being super duper woke and a free thinker. And as a result, they ignore what's right in front of us because they don't want to subscribe to groupthink. When the truth is, we can walk outside and all of us say it's daylight. They're the one person who's going to say, well, maybe it's nighttime, just so that they can get the attention. And that part feels like, yo, you're selling the rest of us out with you, fam. I want to add one last thing before we move on, just because this is so frustrating for me. When we talk about the pandemic, you know, I worked with the CDC for many years. I supported their health initiatives in Maricopa County. Dr. Taylor was a good friend of mine. She was a representative of the CDC when I was working with the Maricopa County Department of Public Health. As a radio personality, they put me on the billboards and whatever to help people go out and take care of themselves, right? I was very aware when Obama was putting together, you know, or at the time when Obama was office, there was a pandemic response team within the CDC. And I was very aware when Donald Trump was going on his deregulation, you know, phase, when he was cutting funds to this, that, and the other, and deregulating industries so that businesses, quote unquote, could thrive. And as a result of Donald Trump's deregulation, the CDC pandemic response team was dismantled. And I remember reading that article And then years later, funnily enough, a pandemic hits the world. And guess who's underprepared for it? The United States of America, right? Now, that deregulation also led to all those trains getting derailed and all those environmental disasters, which, by the way, disproportionately affect this deregulation that Donald Trump was on, disproportionately affects Black and brown communities around the country. For those that don't know, look up a thing called environmental racism. You'll see what I'm talking about. But it's these people, these Black MAGA folks, Donald Trump, that's my president type folks, that ignore all of the connective tissue that puts us in these people's crosshairs. They've been selling us out for decades, and they will ignore that and be contrarian and make silly songs like this. So I'll leave it there. For our final story this week, as most of America is getting ready to reflect on the 4-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd, one woman directly connected to the case is still fighting for a different type of closure. Mike, why don't you share with our listeners more about this story, and then Nicole will get your thoughts before we close out.
Well, she's still saying she wants her property back. There's a lot to it. Let's get into what happened almost 4 years ago. We're about a month away from that, the 4-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd. A lot of the things that happened back then happened for 15 minutes, the response to the death of George Floyd. I remember the pledges that happened from the big companies. I also remember the protests that were going on in small white towns in Ohio. They were going on, and we got a lot of posts, Facebook posts with nothing but black on it. You remember those? Mm-hmm. Where the totally blacked out Facebook posts, mm-hmm, and with no message on
squares,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, all of that. And all that quickly expired. You know, none of the pledges that the companies made came to fruition. None of that happened. It seemed like it all blew away, and to the point where it's done a 360, and it's done. I'm waiting for signs to come up in May that wish George Floyd a happy 4 years of sobriety. It has gotten that bad. Mm. But I just wanted to make sure I got that in, because I would probably not talking about Sylvia Jackson. She says she has recurring nightmares after the death of her friend, George Floyd. He'd come to me and say, I'm okay. And she was a real good friend, you know, and she's still affected by this. The trials went on and moved forward, and she says it's hard to watch. She remained a silent party. She didn't say anything about anything during the judicial process. And Floyd borrowed Jackson's car on May 25th. That's the day of the incident. And she was sitting in her blue 2001 Mercedes, I think it was. And when the officers approached him on Chicago Avenue. And 4 years after that, she's still waiting for investigators to return her vehicle. She just wants her property back, was what she said. And she said right now, all she can do is hold on. So she is traumatized by what happened 4 years ago. Yet from the authorities, she wants her property back. She just wants it back.
Yeah, yeah. Nicole, let's get your thoughts here.
Yeah. This poor woman, I mean, the measure of patience that she's displayed in this circumstance is just remarkable. I think that she could have gotten her car back long before now, could have and should have, but someone probably just dropped the ball. Perhaps an entire department dropped the ball. I also think it would have taken her even longer to get it back if she hadn't stepped up and started talking when she did, and involved some of the local news outlets to kind of do a little investigation and do some back leg work to bring the issue to the forefront. My question is really simple. Where is her lawyer now? And how is she going to be compensated? I mean, she's been inconvenienced. She's been without a vehicle for 4 years. The vehicle that belongs to her is now depreciated in market value. She has not had the use and the benefit of the use of the vehicle for several years. So my guess is that some local attorney is going to hear this story and they're going to eat this up and they're going to get her some lawful compensation, or at least, you know, that's my hope. I feel really bad for her. And like Mike mentioned, I think the trauma associated with all of this, and she sounded, I watched the video, the news clips of her, and she sounded like she really considered George Floyd to be a friend. And so I think that's what kept her from going public and saying anything and making an issue out of anything, because she didn't want to minimize their friendship into something that was legalistic or making it look like she was trying to cash in on it in some manner. But I just feel really sorry for her. I'm glad that she's finally getting some justice. As a matter of fact, the last word I heard on this story was that the AG in that state had sent out word, approved basically for her to get the vehicle back. So I don't know if she's actually physically in possession of the vehicle at this moment, but I do know that the attorney general of that state did issue the approval saying, give this woman back her vehicle. But he also sent it over with a caveat like, well, no, this is not standard protocol, but, you know, we recognize it's been an incubator. Okay, yeah, you can have it. Yeah. So anyway, I hope she gets a little more justice. Sometimes in these human interest stories and things of this nature, a local dealership or somebody, you know, a GoFundMe or somebody in the community might step up and say, hey, you know what, let's let her trade this in on a brand new one and pay the difference or something like that. So hopefully it's just going to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
I think you just gave them a good idea. Somebody listening right now is going to do that. So thank you, Nicole.
I hope so.
That would be great.
And I think that this shows that, you know, really the police are optimized to harm rather than help. And it would be really nice if they were optimized to help, especially victims. So anyway, with that in mind, I'd like to thank you both very much for your time and your insight. As always, once again, today's guests are Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show is produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I am your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media. And I'll be hosting another episode of Civic Cypher this weekend on a station near you. For stations, show times, and podcast info, check civiccypher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.